I'm Jen, and I'm joined by Karen and Brittany, and today we are going to discuss our book club book of the month, and that's going to be Undertow by Michael Buckley. So hey ladies, how's it going?
Hello. Hi. Oh, it's going well.
I was like, are you guys okay? are you awake? Like, it's in the evening. It's not like it's early morning, like typical time. This is, you know, we should be good tonight. Come on. It's been a long, hot couple of days here, though. Has it been hot where you guys are, too?
Yes.
So hot. I was nervous that this thunderstorm was going to interrupt.
Yeah. Us. It's over me at the moment. It's past.
Yeah, it left here.
It's chilling over me at the moment, so let's hope I don't lose you. We'll see how it goes. How about you, Karen? How are you doing?
Pretty good. It's been really hot here. Like, today I was just sitting at my desk at work, and I was, like, sweating. It was so gross. I don't know how I'm ever going to live in North Carolina.
Because you're moving to North Carolina in, like, a couple of weeks, or about a month, right? So,
about a month.
You realize it's way hotter down there, right?
Yeah, it's been, like, in the hundreds the last couple of weeks.
And their humidity is, like, ridiculous. Because I've been in, like, the Tennessee, Carolina area over the summer, and it's pretty intense, I'm not going to lie.
That's not instilling a lot of faith in me.
No, I hope, but the beauty about that area is that every place you go is air-conditioned. Like, where I'm at, not every place up here is air-conditioned.
Yeah.
Which sounds really strange, but true facts, the school I work at, not air-conditioned, and we go to school year-round because we're a special needs school, so yeah, it's pretty disgusting. However, because I'm teaching in the technology department, and my classroom is full of, like, 3D printers and computers and all kinds of stuff that generate a lot of heat but need to remain cool, my room is air-conditioned.
Nice.
Hallelujah. Because otherwise, it would not be pretty. Because I've spent years working there when we have no air conditioning, and it's, like, disgusting. So I'm pretty excited that this summer I will not sweat to death. It's kind of nice. Anyway, enough of that story. Kind of a random sidetrack, everyone. Thanks for listening. Let's get back on to what have you guys been reading these last couple of weeks? Anything exciting? Karen, why don't you go ahead and tell us? Because I see the first one on your list, so go ahead.
Yes.
Give it to us.
The first one I listened to, actually both of these were audiobooks, is The Iron King by Julie Kagawa. And the reason why I picked this up was because I was waiting for the second Talon book to come out, which she also wrote. And I wanted to see how her other series were. And Jen recommended this one to me. And so I thought I'd give it a try. To be honest, I wasn't super into it. Not that it was bad, but I think, in general, I kind of struggle with a lot of the stories about fairies because they tend to be kind of ridiculous and over the top, and that whole, like, trickster mentality that they usually have sort of just really kind of grates for me. But it was well written, and I am a little bit curious about what's going to happen, but maybe not enough to pick up the next one. However, I do have my hands on Rogue now, and that's the second book in the Talon series, so I'm going to start that soon. And then I'm also going to start reading her other series. Is it The Immortal Rules?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's vampires.
About vampires. So I'm going to check the first one out in that and see how I feel about that. Second book I read was called In Cold Blood by Mark Dawson. And this is an adult novel, actually. And the reason why I picked it out was, first of all, they had a 2-for-1 deal on Audible. So, heck yes, I'm going to take advantage of that. And it sounded just like Kill Bill, like exactly like Kill Bill. Her name is also Beatrix. She also has a daughter. She was also, like, betrayed by her team members. They don't call themselves by, like, snake names, but by numbers. And she was number one, just like Beatrix Kiddo in Kill Bill was number one. And she has to go after the main guy. Even the cover of the book is yellow, which is very, like, symbolic for the Kill Bill, the first movie. So I was like, well, if I can look past that, how similar they are, even though I love Kill Bill, you know, we'll see how it does. And although it is quite similar, it was a really good book, really well written, and I might continue reading it because it's just different enough that it gives you a different spin on it, but because I like Kill Bill and because I like kick-ass ladies, it was really fun, too.
Excellent, excellent. All right, Brittany, what have you been reading?
Well, I read this book, you know, that we're going to talk about, so that's a plus. And I haven't been sleeping too well, so I was reading anything that I had on my phone at the moment. So I reread The Magician's Land by Lev Grossman, which is the second book in, or The Magician King. That's the second book, right? Yeah, whatever one's the second yes. one. I have them all on my phone, but I read the second one again. And yeah, The Magician's King is the second one. And I reread that, and I finished that last night at like 3 in the morning. And then I finally finished. I started this random book that I downloaded from iBooks that's called Manon Lescaut. It's French. The person's French in the book anyway. But it is really, really old. Like, it was published in 1731 by Abbey Prevost, which is probably not how you pronounce it. But it's like part of this like memoir typey volume thing. And it's all about this, if they follow like this thing called this man of quality, but it is so, so good. It's like, there's like these uncles and ex-lovers, and it's like a soap opera set in the 1700s, and they're in New Orleans, and it's like, it's fantastic. And I highly recommend it to anyone who's like a fan of like, you know, Jane Austen-y style stuff, because it's really good.
Very fun indeed. Okay. I have to be truthful. I've read very little this past week. I just finished exams like a week ago, and I've been kind of like wanting to do nothing. And then this weekend I had a bunch of time off, but I also had a raging headache because the weather changed. So reading a book really wasn't going to happen. My eyes hurt way too much. But to be fair, I did have a little Netflix binge. And so even if I couldn't like have my eyes open, I could still hear it, which I know sounds really stupid, but sometimes you're just in that space where you can't sleep and you're like so bored, but you can't open your eyes because it hurts too much. So I watched Gossip Girl, like the first season and maybe the half of the second one, over the long weekend, because I was just kind of like, I'm so bored, but I can't really move right now because my head's going to explode. So yeah. And Gossip Girl is a series of books. So, you know, it kind of counts, not really, but.
Close Can enough.
I
tell you,
I forgot, like, how just ridiculous and over-the-top Gossip Girl is. Like, I guess I haven't, like, I don't even think I watched the whole thing when it was on. I think maybe I watched the first season when it started just to see what it was like. But, like, rewatching it, I was like, oh, my God, this is just absurd. Like, the level of absurdity is so crazy, and it's just funny. Because even if you, like, fall asleep and miss an episode, and then you wake back up, it's still the same plotline. It hasn't really changed all that much. So it was okay. That was one of the reasons I picked it. Because sometimes, like, you know when you, like, Netflix is, like, an endless choice? Like, there's movies and there's TV and there's all kinds of things, but you never know what to choose.
Yes.
And so I was kind of just like, oh, but I've seen this, but I really like it. Do I want to watch it again? What am I in the mood for? And I just kind of wanted something frivolous and easy. And so I rewatched Gossip Girl. And I do love Chuck Bass. He's a horrible human being, but he is intriguing at the same time.
And his I've been rewatching Gilmore Girls. Like, I have it on all day, like on my tablet or on my phone. Right.
And I recently did that. Like, Gilmore Girls was like, when it first came back on Netflix, I like watched them because I own like half of the series on DVD. I haven't bought all of them yet. So when it came back on Netflix, I like went through and watched all my favorite episodes and like did all of that. So I was like, I kind of just watched Gilmore Girls. That's why I didn't put that on. So, but yeah, it was Gossip Girl for me, which was, again, slightly embarrassing, but at the same time, really enjoyable. So I'm over it. Alrighty, so let's get on with today's discussion. So Undertow by Michael Buckley was Karen's book choice. As we all know, we maybe have like hounded her extensively about choosing a book, and she finally came up with one. And then I think we all read the description and were like, are you kidding? Because I have to say, I'm not sure the description of the book does it justice in a lot of ways. Mm-mm. And I think if you simply read the back of the book, you might not pick up the book for a lot of readers, depending on what your interest levels are, because it's presented in one way, but really it's kind of a different thing. So, Karen, do you want to explain what the book is about? Because it was your choice.
Yes. First of all, I think that, you know, it's obvious by now, I'm not ashamed about my level of love for this book and for the author. The author's really cool, too. And I think that's really important when you start getting into a new series, because you want to follow the book, but you also want to follow the author and kind of see what they're like. So Michael Buckley is super cool. And the book is basically about mermaids, but not your typical kind of mermaids. When I did my review, I said that they're not your grandma's mermaids, and that's definitely true. These mermaids are, like, hardcore. They have...
Well, they're not just mermaids. I think that's what's really important. Like, that's kind of the... And I think that's what threw me off, when you're like, oh, I picked a mermaid book. I'm like, you did a what now? They are, like, warrior, badass, like, have bones coming out of their hands. They don't look human, which I think is really important to say. Not all of them look the same. There are different classes. So think of all, like, the really cool, twisted, like, stories you've heard about, like, creatures from the ocean, like Selkies and all of those things. And that's where this story goes, with all of these different classes of mermaids, which I think is cool, because it's not like, here's a cute little mermaid with a, you know, a shell cut bra, have at it. It's not what it is at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They're warriors, and they are fierce. They're called Alpha, and they come up onto Coney Island, and the humans start freaking out because they don't know what these things are. They don't know if they're there for good or evil, and they clash a lot, and the Alpha don't really respect the humans, and vice versa. I think, you know, both of them definitely have their issues with each other. And what we see in the beginning of the book is the government trying to incorporate the Alpha into human schools and how that develops. And I think the idea of this story is sort of, it's a lot about racism, which makes it a lot deeper than, oh, this is a story about mermaids, because it's not. They're, you know, scary sea people. And I think it's a lot deeper than it first seems. And I think that's what you're talking about, Jen. Like, when you read the back, you don't think it's going to get as deep as it does, but it really makes you think about a lot of different things. And that's what I enjoyed about the book above everything else, I think.
Yeah, I think what's important to note is that you could take the fact that these are, you know, creatures from the sea and make them people from a different country or a different race, and it's still a story that works. You know, it may be a story slightly more relevant to the 1960s when the Civil Rights Movement was happening, but I think it's still very relevant. If you guys have ever seen the Norman Rockwell painting of the little girl being that's taken into school, and I'm going to forget her name right now because I'm terrible with historical names, but you guys know what I'm talking about. The first school that was integrated in the South. I want to say her name is Ruby Rose, but I could be wrong, so please don't scream at me if I'm wrong. But she was one of the first little girls to be brought, an African-American girl that was brought into basically predominantly white school. And that's kind of what this reminded me of, because the setup is very similar when you're reading about, you know, their rights to go to school and then being brought into school and there being masses of people outside taunting them. This was very similar to the same things that happened. I'm not making an ill comparison. I hope no one takes it that way, but that's kind of what it reminded me of. And so again, it's relevant to many things that happen in today's society with how we perceive someone who's different from what we are, or who we are, and how that works, and what we, again, our perceptions and how people things, and kind of a gang mentality of, well, you're different, this is what I think of you, and I'm going to get all these people to agree with me because you're different. And I think that's a really key, important part of the story. It's not so much the, you know, the mythology of the creatures or anything like that, but it's still, even though it's a fantasy in some, you know, to some extent, it has a lot of relevant kind of, I don't know what the right word is, relevant material, relevant, you know, topics of conversation that you can have today about things that are going on. And I think that's super important, because sometimes people overlook that in kind of a fantasy novel or in something that has, you know, mermaids in it. And so I think it's really important to note that up front, that it has a lot of valuable content that is definitely there that people can kind of take some things away from. Okay, I'm done blabbering. Anyone else?
Well, I'm just going to sound like a complete jerk this whole podcast, because
you don't like it?
I mean, I get it. I got the much deeper issues they were going for. But these people, there were four of them, and they were causing a war. Why would you put them in the school? Like, I could not wrap my head around the logistics of this entire operation. I just could not figure it out. Like, why would you want these four, like, really dangerous people in the school?
Okay. I get it. But again, I think if you look back historically, that's kind of the vibe they were going for.
Oh, I get it. And no, that's why I feel like I can't say anything, because these people came from the bottom of the ocean, not like they lived here. You know what I mean?
No, I get it. Totally get it.
So everything I'm going to say, I'm going to sound like a jerk. So I'm going to be really quiet and just talk about Fathom being Thor the whole time, because. But up front, borrow it, did not enjoy it.
Okay. Karen, how about you?
That hurts really deep down.
I'm sorry, but everything I'm going to try to justify, I'm going to sound like either a racist or I'm a horrible person who doesn't care. So I'm going to just talk about Fathom the whole time.
Okay, fair enough. I say buy, obviously, and you should buy two copies just to make up for what Brittany said.
I love it.
I feel like I shouldn't be on this podcast for today.
Well, too late, you're already here.
No, and you know what? Honestly, it's good, because obviously everyone who reads this book isn't going to love it, and so I think there should be another side of the story.
And let's face it, the last couple
of... Yeah, but I feel like the way you guys presented it, there's one side to this story, and you're on the right side, or you're on the wrong side, because you can come off as a total jerk who hates humanity.
Well, let's put it up front. Okay, this is still a fantasy novel, you guys. This isn't about... anything that's happening in the real world.
Yeah, this isn't representing my greater thoughts of human society. This is representing my thoughts of integrating four fish into a Brooklyn high school.
There you go.
Which is basically what this book is about. See, I sound like a jerk. Okay, just edit me out. Edit, start over. Edit me out of this episode.
Okay, anyway, moving on. I say borrow, primarily because I was actually really surprised at how much I liked this book, because I honestly, going into it, was kind of like, oh, Karen, what have you done to me? But I did really like the book, surprisingly, as I said. It's just different from what I normally read, and I kind of just like some of the things it had to say. So I say buy the book. Anyway, so the setting is in Coney Island. For those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's kind of just off of New York City. It's in Brooklyn, right, Brittany, my resident New Yorker?
Yeah.
Ish. New Jersey girl. So Coney Island is on the beach. It's right in the water. They have, like, the cyclone and stuff there. It's kind of like a boardwalk area. And one day, these mer people, I guess we're going to call them, come out
Alpha.
Of the ocean. The Alpha, that's right. They do have that name. I always forget that part. So the Alpha come up on shore, and there are hundreds of them coming out of the ocean, and they all look very different. Some of them look fish-like, some of them look more human-like, but they all have something that makes them look non-human. So they all can kind of come out of the water, and we go from there. And then fast forward a couple of years, and they are living in a tent city on the beach. And they're not really allowed outside of the tent city area. And nobody knows why they're there. Nobody knows why they won't go away. And so the one neighborhood in Coney Island that's closest to the beach, it becomes the zone. And the zone, the people still live there. They're not really allowed out of the zone, which is kind of strange. But they're kind of stuck with this, you know, having these people not too far away from them. And it's frightening for a lot of different reasons. So the story kind of takes off from there. The story follows one particular girl. Her name is Lyric Walker. And Lyric's kind of an interesting character, because she kind of had this very bad girl kind of vibe to her when before the mer people or the alphas arrived. And then things changed for her. She became very inconspicuous and kind of blended in and wasn't on the radar anymore. Whereas before, she was a little bit more of a party girl, kind of getting into trouble, doing kind of stupid things. And the reason for her change is that her mother is actually one of the Alpha. Her mother was part of a group of people who were sent ashore to assess the humans and their world long before, like 20 years before the Alpha actually arrived. And her mother is a Serena, and they are the closest ones to humans. So they're kind of like the Little Mermaid, if you will, but with legs. So her mother is a Serena, therefore she is half Serena. And now her father knew this, and her mother knew this, and they still stayed and became, you know, a human family, which now presents a problem. Because when the Alpha arrive, her mother is supposed to stay and work with them and be with them and prove that she's one of them. However, they choose to run and not hide very far because they're still in the zone. So all along, the government is looking for them, knowing that 20 Alphas came on land long before and pretended to be human to figure out what's going on. And the Alphas believe that they're untouchables and that they're dirty and they want nothing to do with them. So they're kind of in a really tricky predicament. And Lyric's dad's a cop. So he's kind of got his finger on the pulse of everything, but at the same time, he's also very afraid to lose his family. His wife especially, but also his daughter, because she is half Serena, half human, and nobody really knows what that does, so to speak. So that's kind of the setting and some of the important backdrop of the story. So what did you guys think of the overall style of writing? Did you like it? Didn't you like it? Like, how did you feel about it?
I liked it. I thought it was really engaging. I mean, even the beginning, which I will admit definitely is super weird, and you're like, wow, I don't know how I feel about this book yet, because it kind of drops you right into the action, and you're like, okay, fish people, I'm supposed to take them seriously, and it takes you a little while, but then you really do start to take them seriously, and I think that's a testament to his writing. It was very action-packed, and I believe it went really quickly as well, which is good. You didn't want a story like this dragging on. And just the way that he portrayed the different characters and gave them personalities and made me feel like they were real, despite the fact that they didn't, you know, like Fathom doesn't exactly look human, but you could still relate to him on a lot of levels, even though he was from this vastly different culture.
Very true. Brittany, how did you feel about the writing itself rather than the story?
I didn't mind the writing. I don't like a lot of action sequences. I think it's because of my fatigue with dystopian novels at this point. So I felt that the pacing was good, though, especially towards the end of the book when it's a lot of motion, a lot of moving things, like with water and like running and where are they, and you were able to keep up, I think, which was good. I never got lost or felt like I had to go back and figure out where things were. I think he created the zone in a very vivid way, so you never really felt like you had to figure out where you were in time or space or whatever. So I did like that. The dialogue was rough at some points, especially when they're in the school, and I guess it might be because he's trying to write the creatures, the alpha, like as having like English is not their first language, obviously, but the insults, the calling people jellyfish is like an insult. I laughed so hard. I the first time I read it, I couldn't believe it. And they were like, you could tell, you get the tone from this writing really well. So you could tell how serious like Ghost was. And he's like, these jellyfish. And I'm like, what? I thought that was hilarious. So the writing was good.
Yeah, I like the writing. I understand what you mean about the dialogue, especially in the school. And I think a lot of that is to try to show the differences between human teenagers and then, you know, the alphas. So, but I liked it. I thought it was pretty fast paced, which I like when I'm reading a story. I like it to move kind of quickly. I hate all that, like, extra internal thought of the, you know, the constant back and forth sometimes you get when you're inside someone's head. And I liked that Lyric wasn't necessarily like that. She was pretty kind of clean cut about the whole thing. I also liked the way he wrote Lyric. Sometimes it can be tricky to get a teenage girl just right. And I think Lyric was a well-balanced teenage girl in a lot of ways. So I liked the way he characterized her and kind of the things around her. I think it was a very real story. If you take out the alphas, you have, you know, her friend who has, you know, some serious home issues, and her dad who's the cop who wants to protect everyone. And I felt like that those aspects were portrayed realistically, even though the story on a whole isn't realistic, but like the other aspects of it were fairly realistic. And I enjoyed that part as well, to kind of keep it balanced so it's not so overwhelming. But I liked his writing a lot, actually. It was fun. All right, so the plot. We kind of gave an overview of the plot. There are some other things that kind of move along in the plot. So we talked about, you know, Lyric is actually really half alpha. And part of the plot is the idea that, and we mentioned this earlier, that the students will, or the alphas will be integrated into Brooklyn, into school. And nobody really knows what the reasoning is behind that. I mean, it's not very clear at the start why this is happening. It's just happening. And of course, it's Lyric school. Her mom and dad are both freaked out. They don't want her to go. And it kind of moves from there. And then Lyric, one of the boys in her class is starting a fight with one of the alphas, and he's a Nyx. And he has, because Lyric's mom, Summer, is well-versed in all things alpha because she was one, Lyric is also very well-versed in the alphas. And she knows that this boy is incredibly dangerous. Even if he just looks big, he actually has needles for fingers and all kinds of things that the humans aren't really paying much attention to. They just want to beat him up. So Lyric steps in and tries to stop him. And this garners the attention of the new principal, Mr. Doyle. And he kind of tells Lyric, you can either go to the tombs, which is their version of a prison at this point, or because she was caught up in the fight, or you can meet with the Alpha Prince and teach him to be human in some way, shape, or form. And so she kind of just gets stuck meeting with the Alpha Prince, who is Fathom, which is kind of a cool name for a character, I have to admit. So,
oh, can we talk about that just really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
That was one of my favorite parts. The Alphas come and they're trying to, the Red Cross, they're like trying to give them American like names, yeah. But they start to run out of names. So like they literally just naming them after things they see on the boardwalk. So that's why there's like Ghost and like, yeah. Bumper, like from the bumper cars. I thought that was so great. Like that was just so funny because they just ran out of like, they're like, how many Jennifers can you have? Like
Seriously, really? That's what you're going with? Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay. Anyway, I loved that. I thought that was so funny.
Too many Jennifers. That's how many you can have. So yeah, no, it was really funny. And I liked, like, there are little witty things like that spread throughout, you know, the novel, which I think is really fun as well. And Fathom, which we know is like an ocean term. If you talk about fathoms deep, it's like, I think it's 6 feet deep. And so Fathom chose that name because he says it sounds most like what his real name is, which can't be said above water. Because it doesn't sound right. It's just a bunch of weird sounds to us. But underwater, it's a name. So they tried to name him Thomas, which doesn't seem really fitting, actually. Mm-hmm. And Fathom's female friend is Arcade, which was kind of interesting as well. So Lyric is kind of becomes or works with Fathom. Friends is a loose description at first because he's very prickly. And one of the things that Fathom has to do is, being the prince, he's the only child of, he's the king. All of his brothers are dead. His mother is dead, but he has this horrible stepmother. Shocking. Horrible stepmother plot. Wow. So he has to fight all of the people that disagree with his father. So as the story progresses, and the more and more his father makes these decisions about what they're going to be doing, the more and more Fathom has to fight other people. And these other alphas are strong, and they're violent. And, like, the Selkies in particular are, like, massive hulking people, like, over 7 feet tall. And he has to fight them constantly in order to protect his father's honor. And one of the things I thought was really interesting is that when he's fighting, his family doesn't cheer for him. They actually cheer against him, which is, I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. What did you guys think about that?
I mean, I think the entire idea of him having to fight his father's battles is really interesting. And the fact that they're they're warriors, and they put such an emphasis on those kind of fights that it's incredible. And I think in a lot of ways, yeah, it's horrible. And, you know, we start to like Fathom, so we don't want to see him getting beat up and everything. But he's the prince. And so someday he's obviously going to be king, hopefully. And I think that those trials that he went through would really help him become a better and stronger king.
I mean, I agree with that to a certain extent, except for the fact that he's probably going to die before that happens.
I mean,
like, by the end, like, every time he faced someone, I was like, well, this is it. Like, there was no way he could be that strong. It's unbelievable. The poor guy.
Yeah, here's the other thing. He perceives each wound as, like, a battle, like, a trophy. So he won't let Lyric help him with any medications or anything. So he's starting to get infected, and his shoulder at one point is popped out, and she has to help him put it back in a plate. Like, he basically gets the crap kicked out of him and keeps going. It's a little terrifying, I'm not going to lie. I felt a little bad for him by the end. So by the end of the story, there are some things that happen.
The Alpha, this is going to be great coming from me. The Alpha, when they were living underwater in what I imagine to be like Ariel's type of palace-y type place, they had this other class of people who were lower, the Rascal, or however you say it. And they were basically the people who would provide, like, I guess, food or whatever. Like, they did all, like, the actual labor-y stuff. And then what happened was they discovered that they had this power that could, like, control the water, and it made everything easier. So they started, like, building up places, and then they realized that everyone was going to basically be living together and having a great time, but then it became a class war, and they felt like they were going to be taken advantage of, so they rose up and overthrew the Alpha, and so the Alpha fled, and that was the real problem. That's why they were all on shore, and then now they're coming for them again, and there's going to be a war, and no one believes anyone, and it's frustrating, and Doyle's there with his coffee.
Yes, Doyle.
How horrible was that?
Yeah, Doyle's a mysterious character. I can't quite pinpoint him. How did you guys feel about Doyle? And I think this, like, I think kind of the class wars is another really interesting thing, because within, I think this is something we didn't mention before, within the Alphas, there's, like, a caste system.
I have the page, like, kind of marked where they explain what exactly their role was, because I think I explained that horribly, but that's basically what they were.
Yeah.
They were, like, because they said that they're not slaves. Like, they were part of society. Like, they weren't, like, you know, they weren't that low of a, like, you know, type of terminology. But what happened was is they rose up anyway.
Yeah, so they had a rebellion within their own people, and then they moved into – so basically the Alphas are kind of like refugees at the moment.
Yeah, and they're trying to, like, the first 20 they sent were sent under false, like, pretenses. So the original 20 were sent to, like, you know, scope out for a war – but they didn't know that. They thought that they were just, like, going on this, like, super awesome mission.
Yeah.
To, like, study human life and then report back, like, awesome scientists or something. But then what happened was is that wasn't what it was for. And this king is absolutely insane.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, frustratingly insane.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand, like, anything. They're like, no, listen, we're all going to die. And he's like, it's okay. Kill my son. And they're like, but you won't be king anymore. And this stepmom's like, but I'm pregnant. And meanwhile, I imagine this, like, decrepit old king. And then he's just, like, jumps up and starts fighting. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
It's
a very, very complicated world that he built. But it is explained beautifully in Michael Buckley's language. Not Brittany Lovely's language.
it is complicated, but I find it fascinating in a lot of ways too. Like, he created this world from scratch with all these different caste systems within the Alphas and all this, like, it's just so many different levels of things going on there that I really enjoy. I think that's what took me by surprise. It's not what I was expecting. So I think that's why I enjoyed it so much, because it was something completely other than what I thought it was. So can't go wrong with that. So that's kind of like the overview of the story. I'm sure we're not doing a great job of explaining it, which is unfortunate because it really is good. So from there, let's talk about the characters, I guess. Unless, Karen, is there anything else you wanted to talk about for like the plot and stuff?
Oh, no, I think that was...
I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything important because sometimes...
Should we talk about the ending? Because it's kind of... I felt like... did you guys think that the ending was satisfying?
Yes and no. I think that it was an interesting ending in that, okay, I kind of guessed from the beginning that she was going to have some sort of power. I didn't realize that she was going to be able to control the waves like the others could. And I think that's really interesting to make this person who is half human, who is seen as basically lower than dirt, somebody all of a sudden who's extra special. So that was really cool. I felt like the ending was a huge cliffhanger, but at the same time, that makes me want to read the second book even more. So I guess I didn't really mind.
There is going to be a second book.
Yes. It's a trilogy. Okay.
Ah, see, really glad I didn't know that going in, because I was actually, when it ended, I was like, huh, okay, that's kind of interesting, we could do what The Leftovers is doing this season and literally move the entire thing to Texas, which is what I assume this is doing, because she just gets a text and is like, hey, we're going to Texas. And, but I did feel like I like what Karen was saying, where Lyric, you don't expect her to have any sort of power or anything like that. But when she does, I like that she had to suffer to use it. And not in like a martyry type of suffer way, but I like that it wasn't that easy. Like, it was hard because she was half human. Do you know what I mean? Like, it caused her like this immense amount of pain because it's just reinforcing the fact that she's not like these people, but she can help them. So I did like that there was a bit of a struggle and it wasn't super easy. And then I'm a little disappointed we left Fathom and his dad, like, just chilling half dead on the beach. And then now we're just going to Texas. So I was like, okay, it's fine. I'm satisfied with it being over because it was over. But at the same time, I feel bad because they're like homeless. They were like contemplating begging for change. I'm like, I feel like they should have had something in place for them to get to Texas. But that was probably impossible with battleships being flown through the air.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just can't plan for a flying battleship. It doesn't work well. So we talked about Lyric, we talked about our parents. We have not talked about Bex, who is Lyric's best friend. So Bex is a really interesting addition to the story, because there's a lot going on in this story without Bex's storyline, which is very different from everything else that's going on in the story. Bex lives with her mom and her stepfather. Her stepfather is a horrible, god-awful human being. He beats Bex's mother and has recently started beating on Bex. So Bex's home life is terrible. And you kind of learn more and more about Bex and what she has to go through throughout most of the story. And at one point, Lyric's father, Lenny, intervenes and takes Bex out of the home. Because as a police officer, he knows what he can and can't do to push the limits with Russell, who is her stepfather. And so Bex's mother finally kind of gives in and says, you know what, I need you to take her for a little while. I need to get this right. And so Bex eventually ends up living part-time with Lyric over everything that's happened, because her stepdad is disgusting. And so there is some human violence as well. The violence isn't all just about, you know, between the alphas and the humans. There is some domestic violence as well, which is something that happens, you know, in our society. So it's kind of portrayed here in an interesting way. And then we have... So, do you guys want to say anything about Bex before I move on? Sorry.
I do, because...
Go ahead.
I loved Bex. I think she was, like you said, a really interesting character. I like the idea, kind of going back to Lyric, too, that they were these, you know, sort of, like, living outside the law a little bit, doing things they probably shouldn't have. And Lyric, once she realized how bad things could be for her family if she didn't find a way to turn invisible, you know, not literally, obviously, but kind of not draw attention to herself, she did exactly that, and she kind of changed her whole personality. But Bex was still there for her, and she, you know, encouraged that wild side of Lyric to come out, but Lyric knew the consequences if that happened. Bex, on the other hand, you know, not really aware of what was going on with Lyric, continued to be that person, and that very vibrant personality that she had on the outside was hiding so, so much. And I think she was an extremely well-written character, and I think it's extremely important that this aspect of the story was in the book, because we see the struggle between the alpha and the humans, and we're like, okay, you know, it's kind of hard to see who the bad guy is, who the good guy is, because, like I said before, both sides are doing some things, some pretty terrible things. But we also see the alpha as these sort of monstrous creatures, and I think it's important to remember that humans can be just as monstrous. And somebody like Fathom, who ended up being quite a noble character, when you put him against somebody like Bex's stepfather or her mother's boyfriend, I can't remember exactly who he was.
He was a stepfather.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You just see how good the alpha can be and how terrible the humans can be. And although I think maybe it wasn't a completely necessary plot line, it just helped to give you an idea of what people were still struggling with, things that we struggle with now, despite everything else going on.
Yeah, I think that's a very well put point, Karen. Very better explained than my terrible explanation. Love it. All right, so Bex is also, I really liked Bex a lot. And so she has this, they have this other best friend. Lyric and Bex have this friend, Shadow. And he's kind of their friend. He wants to be like a filmmaker, so he's constantly recording everything. And it's pretty obvious from when you start reading the book that Shadow has a thing for Bex. And Bex kind of plays it off, which is, again, kind of, you're kind of like, oh, come on, you guys, really? And Lyric kind of watches from the background, and she's just like, all right, can you guys just please get together and get this over with? I can't handle the high drama of it all anymore. So I like the way that their kind of relationship played out, and how, because Bex, even though Shadow was one of their best friends, she kind of kept everything from Shadow. He didn't know about her home life. He didn't know how bad it was. Only Lyric did. So eventually Bex kind of opens up to Shadow, and I thought that was a really nice moment too, kind of how he comes in and tries to help her, and how that kind of all plays out, and how they finally figure everything out for themselves. But I did enjoy his character as well. What do you guys think?
Yes, really sad too.
Yeah, that was really sad. Like, was it necessary? Probably not. Was it devastatingly sad when they described his mother and grandmother? Absolutely. It was like soul crushing in the middle of this book. I was like, what is going on? Why am I reading about this?
But again, I think it's important to show that kind of violence. Like I was saying before, it's really important, again, to focus on the fact that there's a lot of violence in this story, but not all of it is coming from the Alpha and Shadow storyline. Once again, just kind of points that out. Like, you kind of go through the entire book and you start falling for Fathom and stuff, but you still think the other Alpha are the bad guys. And you're not really sure what they're up to until you get to the end of the book and you realize that they're running from something too. But the fact that you have these human beings who are being so terrible to their own people, I think is, you know, it just kind of puts into perspective a lot of the other parts of the story.
Yeah, I think one of the things we didn't talk about earlier that we should kind of bring up now is that throughout the whole story, there is a group of people who call themselves the Niners. There were nine, I think it was police officers that were killed, or people that were killed. And they're known as the CI-9, which is the Coney Island 9. So the people that call themselves the Niners are the people that are completely anti-alphas. And people that even associate with the alphas, they go after the people. And so, unfortunately, Shadow falls into that, and it becomes a bigger issue and leads to his death, unfortunately. Sometimes, as you're reading, like Karen pointed out, you think that the alphas are bad, but as you're reading, the humans are worse in so, so many ways. And it just kind of, it's a very eye-opening read, I think, in some ways, because I think in contrast with, you know, the fantasy creatures in the story, as you're reading the humans, you're like, wow. And the sad part is, you're like, there are really people in the world who think like this. Mm-hmm. And it's not always about, you know, some fantasy creature. It's clearly about other human beings. And it's so disturbing on a level, yet so socially appropriate, like in how he portrays things. And it's, yeah. So I don't know. It's an interesting aspect, again, to this story that I find really intriguing. And it kind of makes you stop and think, which I'm not really sure that's something you would expect from this kind of novel, but it definitely makes you stop and think. The other person that is kind of part of this conspiracy group, if you will, in a sense, is their neighbor, Lyric's neighbor, who is Mrs. Novikova. And she is just the worst busybody on the face of the earth. And it's like beyond, like everyone has a busybody neighbor. Stop and think. Some point in time in your life, and if you haven't, you will, and you'll hate them. But they're like a busybody. They want to know everything you're doing. They're constantly questioning, you know, they're constantly eavesdropping, anything like that. But this woman is above and beyond. Like, she's out of control. And she's just involved in everything in their lives. And constantly suspicious and constantly questioning. And just, she's a pot stirrer on so many levels. Like, it's not even funny. So, Karen, what did you think about her?
I mean, she was terrible. And again, you know, a human being who herself doesn't really do any damage, but her actions cause a lot of damage. And I think sometimes I can kind of look at it as, you know, she's just sort of set in her ways and she didn't maybe mean to cause some of the things that she caused. But at the same time, she was always out to get Lyric's family and to make sure nothing terrible was going on in her building. And one of my favorite moments actually was when Lyric's dad like shut her down, and I was just like, finally somebody just says whatever they want to say to her face, because for so long they were very kind and they were like, okay, run to the elevator, make sure she doesn't see you and that kind of thing. And when she finally basically gets sent back to her room, it was just a really satisfying moment.
She's the Dolores Umbridge of this book. Made me feel the same way I did when I was reading Harry Potter for the first time with Dolores Umbridge. Like, I wanted to just throw it across the room anytime she like poked her little head. Like, she didn't have that little like throat clearing introduction like J.K. Rowling wrote into Harry Potter, but she had that same vibe.
I can see it now that you say that. I can almost like picture her. It almost works. I like this comparison. It's very good. Yeah, she definitely was annoying on lots of levels, but so yeah. So those are kind of all the main characters you come across and kind of how things play out for them. So is there anything else you guys want to bring up about this novel that we've forgotten?
I actually want to just bring up Arcade, who was Fathom's, I don't even know how to describe her exactly.
They're called self-sames.
Right, right.
I forget how they describe it, but it's like they support you, and like it doesn't have to be romantic, but it's typically like you're bonded for life. So
yeah,
it's
an like arranged marriage.
Yeah, basically.
I didn't really know how to feel about her for the majority of the book, because she was very kind of like keep everyone at a distance, especially Lyric. And, you know, Lyric was kind of stepping in on her territory. And so it was like, okay, are we supposed to hate her? Because I don't think I really hate her, but I feel like maybe there's more to her story. And we get near the end and come to find out that, you know, she helps Lyric out so much. She helps her get one of those gloves. And I actually ended up feeling really bad for her, considering how Fathom felt for Lyric and how upsetting that was for Arcade. And so I ended up liking her character quite a bit.
Yeah, I think she wasn't the typical. I think oftentimes when you come across not quite the love triangle, but like that idea that they're, you know, there's another involved, that it gets really ugly. And that girl is always portrayed really ugly, like she's nasty, mm-hmm. she's horrible. And I don't think she was portrayed quite that way. I think she was a little more selfless than they're normally portrayed. So I think that works better than, oh, I'm just going to be a bitch because you're stealing my man kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was a different, it was there, but it wasn't so heavy handed kind of
thing. Yeah. And her story went along with everyone else's, where by the end you realize just how set in their ways the Alpha are. And she didn't know any better. Like, I mean, she didn't have one-on-one time with a human. She didn't, wasn't immersed in any type of other culture. She just knew, like, oh, I'm Fathom Selfsame. Like, this is how my life is supposed to be. And then she sees something else happening, and she's clearly confused by it. Plus, her race is about to be wiped out. So, like, I get it. By the end, I was like, okay, all of these people, they're not crazy. This is, like, just, that's how they are. And it made, actually, by the end of it, when in the beginning I was very frustrated with Lyric's mom, because I was like, how could she sit on the beach and just leave her daughter? Like, what is this commitment to her people? Like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. But by the end, it sort of makes sense where her loyalty, like, lies and how she sees that there's really no other option. Like, why she holes up in her room looking for people through, like, you know, all this extra footage and stuff. Because her story bothered me the whole time, right up until the end. Because I couldn't wrap my head around why she would never, like, leave. Like, they had so many opportunities to leave, and it was just very frustrating for me as to why they didn't leave.
Yeah, and I think it's until you see that trial at the end that you're like,
yeah,
you get a better idea of how their society works. And I loved that trial. I loved the idea of, like, no, you have to argue, and you have to yell, and you have to be fearsome. If somebody comes at you, you do not back down, even if it kills you. And the fact that Summer did that, and we saw a different side of her, which was probably crazy for Lyric, but also we see Lyric do that too and start arguing with the king and all of this, and you're just like, wow, she's picking up on it. And I thought that was the best inside look of their culture that we got.
Yes, very true, very true. All right, so is there anything else you guys want to say about Undertow?
No.
Okay. I'll cut that part out. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up our discussion about Undertow by Michael Buckley. As you guys can tell, for the most part, we really enjoyed it. And I think this book has a lot to offer, so definitely check it out. Book two is called Raging Sea, and the cover was revealed not too long ago. And I believe Karen posted about it, so you guys can check that out. And so, Karen, clearly you're going to read book two.
Clearly.
Clearly. Brittany, now that you know there is a book two, are you remotely interested?
No, I think I'm going to write my own fan fiction about what happens in Texas after I watch The Leftover second season.
Oh, boy. Okay, and I will read book two because I am very, very curious to see how this all plays out. Yes, Karen, you win. You win, Karen. So.
I'm sorry, Karen. I tried. I even went to the beach to read it so I can look at the ocean while doing it. And I tried. I read it. I did read it.
You know, the fact that you tried, that makes me happy. So thank you for reading it, even though it wasn't exactly your favorite book.
Oh, and I didn't bring this up, but I talked about it before we started recording. Fathom, the whole time in my head, was like Thor.
Yes.
The way he spoke and, like, that those early Thor scenes, like, where he smashes the coffee cup and demands another, like, that was just the image of Fathom I had in my head the entire time. So if you're going to pick it up, watch Thor before you do.
I love it. All right, so Brittany, because next month the book is yours, remind us what it is again.
Oh, yes. It is called When We Were Animals by Joshua Gaylord.
All right. So that is the July book of the month, which we will be reading probably towards the end of the month because we will all be at Comic-Con in the beginning of the month.
I won't because I'm a saint.
Oh, yes. So sorry, Brad. I take it back. Brittany will be on the beach reading books while the rest of us will be in San Diego going crazy. It's fine.
Yep. I'll be holding down the fort.
That's right. Someone has to. All right. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.